So this is where I respect Bruce Boudreau. The great lesson in all of this is don't go to war with your star if you're a head coach, because you will lose, specifically when someone has that much term and that many dollar signs still attached to his contract. You just can't win that battle. And why I like Bruce Boudreau out of all of this, because I think at the beginning of the season, Bruce Boudreau said to himself, I think this might be it for me. I don't know that I can get these guys to do this, and I'm going to get to George McPhee here in a second. I don't know that I can make these guys play the way they need to play to win playoff games, but if I'm going to try to turn them into that team, I'm going to do it on my terms. And if that means sitting down Ovechkin, so be it. If that means scratching Semmons, so be it. I am going to do this, and if I go down, it's going to be on my terms. As far as I'm concerned, Bruce Boudreau walks out of Washington with his chin held high. To your point, the fastest coach at 200 wins, chins high with barbecue sauce, and we don't get all, we understand all that. But he's a little bit of Haagen-Dazs on that one. But he walks out of there with his chin held very high, knowing that he, even though he went out, he did it on his terms. And he tried. And that meant, I'm going to go to war with my star player because that's the right thing to do at that point. Now, Dale Hunter's going to come in. And Greg, will there be anything that Dale Hunter does or tries to do with this Washington Capitals team that Bruce Boudreau didn't try to do either?
Yes.
What's that?
He will reverse course and play the shit out of Alex Ovechkin.
Well, he does. That's his MO with the London Knights. He's always played his star. Ask Corey Perry with the Anaheim Ducks how much he played. Ask Dave Bolin. Go ask Robbie Shrimp if he can find him now how much he played the hell out of those guys. Patrick Kane, Sam Gagne, the players now, Olli Maatta and Max Domi. Ask how much they play the top guys. He has always played the hell out of their top players on the London Knights, and he'll do the exact same thing here. But what if, here's the question, what if, once again, the Washington Capitals don't react to a defense-first structure? What happens if they don't mind their knitting? Like, at some point, do you say to yourself, George McPhee has given this team, has given his coach a bunch of rock stars. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to go eight bars to chorus, back to eight bars. They want to solo. And that's the kind of hockey players there. Like, at what point do you say, you can't, you know, you can't turn this team into something that they're not? Frank Zappa would always say, a cow don't make ham. Like, I don't know that you can turn this team into a defense-first squad. I just don't know if they have the personnel to do that. Like, are we forcing something? Did Bruce Boudreau try to force something on the Washington Capitals? Did Dale Hunter, will Dale Hunter try to force something on the Washington Capitals that is just not there at the end of the day, no matter how hard you try?
I think what McPhee said, to kind of summarize what you've said here, is that he emptied the tank, was the phrase that McPhee used. He emptied the tank. I likened it to a babysitter who dumps out the entire toy chest to get the kid to stop crying, and it's still crying. And he did everything he could. Mm-hmm. He tried every trick in the book. He reinvented himself as a coach, for Christ's sake. And even that didn't work. So at that point, I agree with McPhee. You know, I didn't think earlier this week, earlier this week means Sunday. I didn't think that the Cavs were going to fire him, to be quite honest with you. I put that on Twitter. I got ridiculed for it now. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was going to go. I really thought that they would stick with this guy and put it on the players to turn this thing around, at least through the week, at least through these three games at home. But much like we saw when Davis Payne got turfed, this home stretch here for the Capitals is now going to be Dale Hunter's launching pad.
St. Louis tomorrow, Pittsburgh Thursday. Boy, that's a juicy one. And the Ottawa Senators on Saturday. That's the first three for Dale Hunter.
And don't think that Pittsburgh game isn't a carrot. You get one game to get your ass in gear.
Yeah.
Then you get Sidney Crosby coming into your building, and you don't want to embarrass yourself there. All right, let's start the show.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet and Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
You know what Bruce Boudreau's biggest problem was? I think that, and I think we talked about this on the show last week, Greg. He let the horses out of the barn when he took over from Glenn Hanlon. And it's probably a smarter thing to do that later on in your coaching tenure, because bringing them back to the barn is a lot harder. Like, if I'm Dale Hunter, I come in right now, I think, as much as I may be, hey, I got to get Alexander Ovechkin on side, I got to get everyone on the same page here, as much as it might be tempting to say, Alex, you're going to get 27 minutes tonight, go freestyle, cut a solo album, don't you think this team still needs medicine before they get sugar? I think we may have lost Greg. Did he drop out again? I think we may have lost him. Let me just send him a direct message here. Hello, Wish. Where did you go? Oh, man, I can't type. Well, it seems as if we've lost the feed with Greg Wyshynski. You going to call me? All right, you can give him a buzz. So for the next couple of moments, I'll just freestyle talking about solo albums. Coming up on today's program, we will talk plenty about Dale Hunter taking over for Bruce Boudreau as the head coach of the Washington Capitals. We'll talk with Alan May a little bit later on in about half an hour time about the situation going on in Washington and what the first order of business is for the Caps' new bench boss. Also, the other bit of coaching news today, and I don't think it should really come as any surprise considering how this team has skated with straight legs over the past couple of weeks. Paul Maurice relieved of his duties today in Carolina. Kirk Muller takes over from the Milwaukee Admirals of the American Hockey League, where he's done a really nice job with a really young team. I mean, there's something in the neighborhood of, I believe, 9, 10, maybe even 11 rookies on that Admirals squad. And Kirk Muller has, with that team, the lowest goals against average in the American Hockey League. So we'll talk about that with Chip Alexander, who's going to stop by in a couple of moments' time to get the time and temp on what's happening in Carolina with the coaching change and what Kirk Muller's first order of business may be with the Carolina Hurricanes. When I look at Carolina and I look at how they've played this season specifically, knowing how Eric Staal is having a, let's be generous here, folks, a soft season. You know, not the best season for Eric Staal. And considering that outside of Jeff Skinner and Eric Staal, it's really sort of a pop gun offense right now. There were many questions as to why Paul Maurice has them playing a river hockey style, a run and gun style, where I think most people thought if you're going to go systems with the Carolina Hurricanes, don't play river hockey. Probably best to mind your own knitting, a lot of 2-1 games, try to get into overtime and try to win in a shootout. It's not very exciting hockey. But many who watched the Carolina Hurricanes this year said, you know what, it may be boring, but it may be the Carolina Hurricanes' best chance of success this season. So you may say that's what ultimately cost Paul Maurice's job. Nonetheless, Maurice is out and Kirk Muller is in. The press conference still to come a little bit later on this afternoon. We will talk about what is happening. We'll stick with coaches. What's happening with the Anaheim Ducks and another tough loss yesterday at the hands of the Toronto Maple Leafs, 6-13-4. They've lost 16 of 18 games after a 4-1 start. Will Randy Carlyle be the next to walk the plank now that the dominoes are falling in the National Hockey League? And just so we're all on the same page again, Randy Carlyle last year did sign a 3-year contract extension. He is in year one of his new deal with the Anaheim Ducks. So it may be an expensive proposition to dismiss the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. But when you say to yourself, well, it may cost us $1 million, it may cost us $1.5 million, but we should be able to make that money back in playoff revenue if we get a new coach in here and turn things around and actually make the playoffs, that may turn out to be a relatively smart investment. So we'll talk about what's happening in Anaheim as well. We'll try to get Greg Wyshynski here back on the program. Oh, I just got it. Oh, I got it. I got something from Greg. Hey, man, I'm having tech issues. Really? Oh, okay. I thought this was just that you're just goofing on Jeff. I'm just going to go make myself a shake. I'll come back later. We will talk about Sidney Crosby and Nick Foligno and Dan Bylsma and Brian Murray and some of the finest audio. I love Brian Murray. I love the general manager of the Ottawa Senators. He's a wonderful person. He's always been great to deal with, and he is an old school guy. A little bit later on, we'll play you the audio from yesterday. We aired it on Sportsnet last night, and it's made the rounds. Of Brian Murray discussing in a very calm and civilized manner the mistakes that he made by not dressing Neil and Karkner in the game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. This, of course, comes from the Sidney Crosby elbow Friday night to the chin of Nick Foligno. Nick Foligno afterwards, this little nickel and dime recap here for you, saying he's disappointed in Sidney Crosby because he barked all summer long about headshots, and then his third game in, what does he do? He hits Nick Foligno in the head and very disappointed. Crosby said there was nothing to it. He was talking about body checks. He wasn't talking about scrums in front. And man, Brian Murray just comes down with the hammer yesterday, saying it was his fault for not having his tough guys in the lineup. I guess it's okay to cross-check people in front of the net. And if someone touches your goaltender, you can elbow them and butt-end them in the face. Man, the Murray stuff, folks, if you haven't heard it, is gold. Absolutely gold. So we'll talk about Brian Murray in a little bit later on. Oh, by the way, Sidney Crosby named, surprise, surprise, Sidney Crosby named the NHL's first star of the week, followed by Corey Schneider, goaltending controversy in Vancouver, and Brian Elliott. And I know there have been a number of candidates for comeback player of the year. Dallas has one with Sheldon Surrey, even though he hasn't registered a point, I believe, in the 8 games since Alex Goligoski has been out. Edmonton has themselves a couple in Ryan Smith and Nikolai Habibulin. But for many people, I mean, who saw this coming? And if you're tuned in from Ottawa right now, you know exactly where I'm going with this one. Who saw Brian Elliott coming? Who saw that Brian Elliott was going to resurrect his NHL career? Crickets. Tumbleweeds. Nobody saw this one coming. He's your third star of the week. So there's the program today. If we get a chance to get to it, there's a lot to talk about today on the program. And so we're going to go a little bit of, we're going to go Broadway today and extend the hour. We'll talk about Max Pacioretty and the hit against Chris Letang on Saturday in the Pittsburgh-Montreal game. And a lot of people were quick to point the hypocrisy finger at Max Pacioretty, who was all over everywhere complaining about Zdeno Chara last year. And
hey, Merrick.
What? Hey. I'm doing all right over here. This might just be the Merrick versus sorry. Merrick show from now on. You know what? That was
Jesus.
Pretty good. That was
what
pretty good.
Had technical issues, right?
What happened?
Here I go. It'll drop off again. I'm sure. I don't know, man. It just stopped working.
Because you had it, like, it in the beginning, in the intro, too, right? Like, you just dropped off.
Let's talk about Mueller and Maurice for a second.
No, I was having a good time. I was just getting into Pacioretty and Letang. I've already talked about that. Here you come in harshing my buzz.
I just got to say this about Mueller. It's pretty remarkable that this guy wasn't hired by some people because of a lack of experience, and his experience is 2 months in the AHL.
Yeah. You know, one thing I do want to point out, I mentioned this on Twitter as well, and hit us up with your thoughts, by the way, on the coaching moves today and what the expectations you have for both Mr. Mueller and Mr. Hunter as well. On Twitter today, I made the point, and this just speaks to a couple of things. One, the classiness of the Nashville Predators and David Poile specifically. And two, the fact that Barry Trotz is there and will never be fired, period. Good for the Nashville Predators for allowing the Carolina Hurricanes to talk to Kirk Mueller in the first place, because in Kirk Mueller's contract, there was a no contact, no leave clause. Like, no one else could talk to him without getting special permission from the Nashville Predators. And right away, and 2 months in, and listen, I was making the point when you were off in cyberspace, Greg, that, you know, he's got one of the youngest teams in the American Hockey League, and he has the lowest goals against in the AHL. Like, he's done a really good job with the AHL team already. And right away, inside of 2 months, David Poile said, Kirk, I'm not going to stand in your way. If you want to talk to Carolina, want to get a deal done with Carolina and make your way into the National Hockey League, so be it. Go for it. I'm not going to stand in your way. So thumbs up for the Nashville Predators for allowing that to happen.
I put this move over in a pretty significant way on Puck Daddy today. And you know, the automatic accusation is that it's because I'm a Devils fan and Mueller used to be the captain and whatever. I don't hold Mueller in the same regard as a Devils fan as I do other players, you know, like Verbeek, for example, or Bratton. Mueller was always a guy who, I don't know, he never connected to me as a fan. That said, I think he's a remarkably good coach.
I think
much like in the same way that Karl Rove is considered Bush's brain, I think he's Jacques Martin's noggin.
Yeah.
I think he made that team work. The entirety of that playoff run to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years back can be credited to Mueller. And if you look at what's really plagued this Carolina team, it's been special teams in a lot of cases. They have the second worst power play right now, statistically, in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. If you want to know how quickly you could turn things around just by getting your shit correct on special teams,
yep,
ask the St. Louis Blues.
Oh, boy.
How quickly that thing can turn around. So I don't think Mueller is a miracle worker, but I do think he's the right guy for this gig. And I do think we're going to look back at this day and say that the Carolina Hurricanes made a move that several other teams will regret not having made when they had the opportunity to.
Our first guest is on the program, speaking of the Carolina Hurricanes. You can follow him on Twitter at @ice_Chip. He is Chip Alexander, covering off the Carolina Hurricanes. Chip, thanks so much for joining us today. I can't bring myself to say that this was a surprise. Can you?
No, it's not a surprise. I think this is something that's been talked about probably for the last week to 10 days, and certainly, you know, when they lost in Montreal 4-0 and played so poorly a few weeks ago, there was talk about it happening then. And I know that Jim Rutherford has been checking on various people and kind of anticipating that he might have to make this move. So it was probably a matter of when, and that's all, just the timing of it. And I don't think anybody in Raleigh is really surprised by it.
Hey, Chip, you know, the Capitals, of course, make their move on the same day as this move, leaving Guy Boucher as the most senior member of the Southeast Division, which is kind of odd. Everybody kind of focusing on Ovechkin in Washington as far as being a coach killer, potentially. Has Eric Staal gotten any of that, and if not, why?
I don't believe so, and I've been asked that question before today. I really think that Eric Staal has gotten along well with Paul Maurice, and I think he has respect for Maurice and his coaching. I know, obviously, Eric's been probably frustrated this year that he hasn't been able to find some line mates that he can really mesh with. Even with Jeff Skinner, it's been a little bit of an adjustment. And so I really believe that, Maurice always had the reputation of being a player's coach. I really don't think that he's really lost all the confidence in the room, but certainly some of it. But I really don't believe it was a real clash, not quite like what's going on in Washington between Staal and Maurice.
You know, the way I looked at the Carolina Hurricanes situation, this is the one, I'm with you, and I know Paul Maurice. We go back to when I was working with the Marlies doing color, and he was a head coach, so I'd sit next to him on those bus trips to Syracuse and Rochester, et cetera, and know him quite well, and know what players think of him. They like Paul Maurice. You know, to your point, Chip, he's a player's guy, and they like him. The one criticism that I think may be legitimate this year with Paul Maurice is, based on the personnel that Jim Rutherford gave him, he was playing the wrong system. Like, playing river hockey with that team probably wasn't the best idea. You needed to probably play, you know, kitty bar the door, just try to get into overtime, salvage a point, and then maybe win it in the shootout. Because to your point, Chip, you know, they don't have the big offensive pop that we've seen out of the Carolina Hurricanes on occasion in the past. They have a team that really needed to mind their knitting in their own zone and play a very safe, conservative game. But Paul just didn't have that team playing that style. Would you agree with that?
That's pretty close to it, and he tried to do that in the last couple of weeks. I think the realization was, especially with Eric Staal struggling, that it's going to be hard to score goals. And if you can't score goals, then certainly these goals against and shots against are apt to come down dramatically. And certainly the switch was made to playing a tighter defensive game and really looking to get back defensively with the forwards and help out. And you're right, play more conservatively. And I think that worked for a few games, and then they cut their shots way back. But you know, just like the game last night, you have one breakdown here and one there, one early in the game in the first minute and one late in the game, and they wind up being goals. The next thing you know, you've got a hard-fought 4-3 loss, and it's just the accumulation of these things. And I think the confidence of the players has gotten beaten down so much now that it's almost as if they expect bad things to happen rather than going out and trying to, you know, do some good things. So I think it's good they went outside the organization. You know, there was some talk maybe they would hire Jeff Daniels, the head coach of the Charlotte Checkers and former player and coach here, or someone like that, Ron Francis or someone. But I think it's good to get a new voice and some new ideas into the whole mix.
The new ideas will be there for quite a bit, sir. A contract, I believe, that runs through the rest of this season and then three additional years. Were you surprised by that?
A little bit. I thought it might be more of a two-year contract, especially for this year and two more, especially with somebody who hasn't had any head coaching experience, really. I mean, even at the AHL level, this is his first year. So certainly Kirk Muller was very well thought of, and I know that there have been a number of teams that have touched base with him, and certainly it's only a matter of time before he got a head coaching job. But a little bit of a stretch, and maybe that's what it took to get him to take the job.
Do you expect to see a more defensive-oriented Carolina Hurricanes starting with the game on Tuesday?
Well, and judging from the things I've read about it, and I don't know Kirk, so just in the way he's talked about his style, I mean, it's been defense first, but he also likes to have a very aggressive forechecking team. So he likes for his forwards to work pretty hard, which is going to be pretty interesting because I think, well, you could probably say that about a number of players on the team, but hard work is probably going to be something new for some of them. So, and I hate to say that about them, but I think the players know who they are, and probably would be good for Kirk to come in here and really, light a fire into some of these guys and some that need it. There are some that don't need it, but some that do need it.
Finally, Chip, and thanks for your time on a busy day. 1 to 10, 10 being steal of the century, 1 being a complete bust. Where does the Thomas Cabrillet signing fall right now for the Carolina Hurricanes?
Scratched yesterday, Greg. Scratched
that's
again.
That's pretty low on the scale, I think, now that he's a healthy scratch, right? I do not think that he obviously has not met the expectations of what they wanted from him. One big concern with Thomas Caberle was that his conditioning coming in. I don't think that's been a real issue. I think it's been more his play. They expected certainly more on the power play. So if you want to rate him a disappointment at this point, yes, you'd have to say he's a disappointment.
All right, Chip, thanks as always for stopping by. I much appreciate it. I know it's a busy day for you. Thanks for taking time with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Chip Alexander. Yep.
We should mention, by the way, we didn't get really a chance to set this up because of my terrible, awful technical difficulties, but Alan May also coming up later in the program, talk about the Capitals. And Alan, by the way, Alan torched Boudreau on local television before the firing and just destroyed that team for its effort in Buffalo. So that'll be a good conversation to have.
I teed it up. Don't worry.
All right, good.
While you were gone, I
couldn't hear anything. I don't know what happened. It's not like I'm working on friggin' wireless here at a Starbucks.
You back in mom's basement again?
No, I'm back in my office. Mom's basement was a peach.
The show was better when you were back in mom's basement.
It really
was.
Yeah, I know. Townhouses of Ashburn, less than sign, my mom's basement, evidently.
Well, we'll see what the houses are like in Hyde Park because I got my line set up at the house today. So we're setting it all up tomorrow morning. So tomorrow will be the maiden voyage of Elena here all by herself. Are you going to miss me, Elena? You gonna miss me? Oh, you poor little
thing. She can eat a pizza without ridicule.
I know. Greasy as she wants. Won't have me coming in and say, what are you doing, woman? Hey, here's a question for you. It's the father-son's trip right now for the Carolina Hurricanes. Awkward firing your coach while that goes on. Do you think for one second that young Brett Sutter went up to Jim Rutherford and said, sir, if you're looking to make a coaching change, my dad is out of work right now.
Wow.
His father, just so you don't know, is Daryl Sutter, now ex-general manager of the Calgary Flames. No, Brett, we're fine. We're going away from the organization right now for this.
Again, like, if you're a fan of the Capitals or of the Montreal Canadiens, and you see Mueller walk into this gig and turn that thing around Hitchcock style, you're beating your head against the wall.
You know,
Mueller couldn't coach the Habs because he doesn't speak French.
But there's another reason.
How ridiculous that entire situation is.
Well, that's always the way it's been, and right or wrong, and I think it's wrong. I think we all think it's wrong. That's the way it's always going to be. You know, I don't think that Mueller would have succeeded in Montreal. You know why?
Why?
For the same reason that, you know, Dave Lewis didn't work in Detroit. It's always tough, and maybe this is what happened with Gabby in Washington. It's always tough when a coach goes from the assistant, and you can say, hey, well, Larry Robinson, and that's the exception that proves the rule. But it's always challenging when a coach goes from the assistant's role, where he's nice guy Eddie, hey, me and the wife are having a barbecue, why don't you come by this weekend? Where you're the nice guy, to going to the head coach, we have to be the taskmaster, where you have to be the guy that doles out punishment and decides on ice time. Because at that point, players would look at you like, hang on, two weeks ago, when you're the assistant coach, it was all like, noogies in the parking lot, I love you, little buddy. And now, you're healthy scratching me, and you're cutting down my ice time. Which guy are you? I'm looking at you like a fraud. Like, you look at the history of the NHL, and it's very rare. Robinson may be the only guy. Tweet me up if I'm wrong. I'm probably missing a couple, but find them for me, folks. Where an assistant coach has gone to the head coaching position, and it's been successful. It's so challenging because players look at you and say, man, you're a phony. This really isn't you. I'm not buying what you're selling.
In Boudreau's case, he got elevated straight from the AHL.
And that's fine because he wasn't. Yeah. I mean, he was around those guys. He was around Mike Green and Hershey as a head coach.
Oh, God, yeah. He came in and got an entire group of players that played for him in Hershey to play.
Bingo.
In a way that Hanlon couldn't.
Yep, totally. That's why I think it would always, and I know the default usually is, oh, well, just bring in the assistant coach and that'll work because the guys love him. No, it doesn't, because you have to adopt the new personality. And the minute you adopt the new personality, players look at John McClain. Like, look at John McClain with the New Jersey Devils. Like, for years, the assistant. And then when he became the head coach, dude, you're a phony. Like, that's how players will look at you.
It dials back to Boudreau again. He tried to adopt a completely new persona.
That's where I was going. Like, he tried something. I got to be, you know, stiff and stern Bruce. I'm not like nice guy Bruce.
Right.
That's everybody's buddy. Hey, go play hockey, boys. This is cool. We're having a good time.
Now, obviously, McPhee admitted that Hunter had been circling around this job for the better part of a decade, that they had talked previously about him coming back and coaching this team, but the quote-unquote timing wasn't right, which I think tells you that maybe there might have been an inquiry during the summer to Hunter about this gig. What do you think about Kirk Mueller being out there, maybe not available, but out there, and the Washington Capitals job being open? Do you think Mueller would have been a better fit in D.C. than Hunter?
I know for a fact there was interest in Mueller going back a couple of weeks when the Washington Capitals sort of decided that they were going to make this move and never got as far as the interview stage. But Greg, I know for a fact that there was interest in Kirk Muller. Yes, there was interest in Kirk Muller.
Who better to ask for a favor than David Poile? Right?
Or you formerly with the Washington Capitals organization.
I know. It all fits. Our Da Vinci Code conspiracy theory is all fitting together now, Merrick.
No, we do that one. No, we did that one last in the conspiracy show already. But I'll tell you what, that to me, and I saw you wrote about this on Puck Den, I thought it was a really salient point. If I'm the Washington Capitals, Kirk's my guy because he can walk into that room and get the attention like that. Boom! How do you get it? Boys, I figured out how to shut down your team. Figured out how to stop Ovechkin. I figured out how to stop the Washington Capitals. I beat you. Now let's all win together. Now your enemy is yours.
It's like the government hiring Matthew Broderick after he cracked the Whopper in War Games. It's basically
how
it works.
It's like,
I've figured out your shit, and now you can hire me, and I'll fix it for you.
You know what the CIA does consistently? Consistently. It hires hackers.
Yeah.
Hires
totally.
Hackers. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's the smartest thing to do. And by that philosophy, Greg, I think you nailed it. I think Kirk Muller would have been the best choice for the Washington Capitals. Alex,
In both cases, the experience thing bothers me. Like, I know that you can sit here and say that Dale Hunter has 10 years of experience, one of the most winningest coaches in the history of junior hockey. Like, I was on the Slate's podcast this morning, and one of the boys mentioned minor league hockey. That's a different animal, man.
Totally.
Like he's coaching in AAA baseball.
Yep.
It's a different animal, and you can count on one hand the number of guys who've successfully transitioned from junior to the pros.
You need that. I think you need that intermediate step, and many people do.
Yeah.
It is a hard transition between. And listen, did Dale Hunter get through to Patrick Kane and Sam Gagner and Corey Perry and Dave Boland and all these guys, Danny Savret and Mark Methot when they were playing junior with the London? Absolutely. He totally did. He resonated with those guys. There are a whole other. I mean, you look at the way the London Knights have always played under Dale Hunter. And even though this year they roll the fourth a little bit more, it's basically a three-line team. And they're a wildly successful team. And it's one of the wealthiest teams in all of junior hockey. You know, the Hunter boys from Petrolia, all they do is buy tin cans, fill it with money, and bury it in the backyard. Petrolia is full of tin cans of Hunter money that they make with the London Knights organization. That's what one day, like if there's a nuclear war, right? And everyone's wiped out and civilization has to start all over again from apes and we have to evolve and everything. And one day we find, you know, someone digs up all the backyards in what we then knew as Petrolia, Ontario. They will find tin cans full of money that is all the Hunters from centuries ago, from all the money they pulled out of the John Labatt Center in London, Ontario with the OHL. But there is a very specific way you can coach kids when you dangle a carrot in front of their faces, and that's the NHL carrot. It's different when you sit down with someone who has $124 million in his hip pocket and he ain't going anywhere, and he just had the last coach that he didn't like fired.
The essential question about this move is, does this make them a better team in the playoffs? And from a tactical standpoint, maybe it does, because Boudreau used to get out-coached in the playoffs, and maybe Hunter doesn't get out-coached. Maybe from an X's and O's standpoint, he will be better than Boudreau.
I don't understand how.
Can he get those guys rocking and rolling? Because Boudreau tactically would get out-coached. He got out-coached by Bylsma. He got out-coached by the Jacques Martin-Kirk Muller combo. He'd get out-coached. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a very good guy as far as versatility. He made one good call in the playoffs, which was getting off of Theodor and starting Varlamov
after
instead.
one game, yes.
Right. And that was really bold and ballsy. But most of the time, this guy would get out-coached. Now,
was he
out-coached,
or did his players not do what he wanted them to do? Because that's what I
believe. Well, it was. I mean, obviously, it's a combination of both, but he got out-coached.
Okay.
He did. He got schooled.
Can
Hunter get this team playing better?
I don't know.
In the playoffs?
The thing is, he's going to walk into us, and I keep banging on the same drum. I know that, hey, Merrick, you're playing the same note. It's like a Ramon solo, or that Neil Young, hey, hey, my solo, where it's one note for 16 bars. I know I'm playing the same thing, but Hunter's going to walk in, and he's going to have to do the same thing that Bruce Boudreau was trying to do. Guys, we all love the way the Washington Capitals play hockey. It's fun. It's cool to watch. It's fun to play. But that's unfortunately not how you win games in the NHL. We need to learn how to play defense.
Our question of the day was, give us your predictions, reactions to both of these coaching changes. A couple of the early entries into this question. Pietro writes in, good short term, but not long term. I guess that applies to both. Let's see here. Brian Ray, Alex Semin will still be a lazy, effortless slug.
Oh, man. That's stiff.
Scotch writes,
he'll get more ice time, though, I'll say that.
Disappointed I'll no longer be reminded of one rotund man's childlike enthusiasm for ice cream every time I see Washington play.
Mark Stern writes in, this is Stern imagery on Twitter, Dale Hunter cross-checks Ovechkin until he listens. How many times is that Pierre Turgeon incident going to be referenced now from here until Dale Hunter loses his job with Washington?
Well, I thought JP from Japers Rink made a good point. You know, I made the Turgeon joke too, and rightfully so. It's part of the guy's history as much as some of the other off-ice stuff that I'm surprised hasn't been mentioned quite yet, but will be, I'm sure. But the notion that the Turgeon thing will be weaponized as a criticism when one of his guys headshots another player, I'm anticipating that.
Yeah.
As JP is, and I agree, that's stupid. I mean, that's just stupid.
Yeah, it's dumb.
You can mock the Turgeon thing all you want because it's a part of his history. But to then use that as part of his rap sheet, here's the coach that once attacked Pierre Turgeon after the buzzer.
And what credibility does he say complaining about a headshot against one of his players?
Yeah,
how dare
exactly.
He?
Exactly. Utter hypocrisy.
Oh, hypocrisy is the greatest luxury. Tim Wilcox writes in, El Timbo Libre. Oh, nice Twitter handle. I don't have a prediction beyond thinking it'll be fascinating to watch the dynamic between AO and Hunter develop. That is going to be one of the most. That will be one of the most interesting relationships. Like, can you think of a more potentially explosive dynamic than Dale Hunter? Like, think about Dale Hunter for a second here. Fiery, you know, passion filled, you know, prone to, you know, not just always sane reaction. And Alexander Ovechkin. Like, is this potential? I mean, this could be. There's enough rope here to either swing or hang. It's going to go one way or the other.
Well, that's why I think the entirety of this situation rests on Ovechkin's shoulders. Like, he has a chance to prove that what he did, and let's not sugarcoat it, he killed a coach.
Yep.
What he did will have been the right decision if all of a sudden he looks like Ovi again, this team starts winning. And again, they feed off him. They fed off him as a younger player with the enthusiasm. They feed off him now when he's sulking and when he's not putting in 100%. So, you know, he's got a chance to turn this thing around. Maddie Mammoths writes in, sir, this is to you, Merrick.
Hmm.
Are you trying to imply that Colin Campbell was something other than a complete success as a coach?
Point.
Hey, before we get Alan May.
Oh, and it's
here,
Cinnamon Girl, not Hey Hey My My, by the way, with the one note from Wayne Whitaker. Thanks, bud. I was stretching for one.
Before we get Mr. Alan May on the line, let's do a couple of puck headlines. I know you did some before, but... let's do some more puck headlines.
There's other things happening?
What?
Nerd versus Wyshynski. Puck headlines.
Now, I don't know exactly what Merrick was telling you boys and girls about while I was having technical difficulties.
Bad things about you, Wish. Bad things about you. You're a bad
Dateline
man.
Dateline Philadelphia, Chris Pronger will have surgery on his left knee tomorrow afternoon, said Paul Holmgren. They expect him back in 4 weeks. The procedure will clean out some loose particles that have given Chris some problems over the last month or so. We were hopeful that the time missed with a virus that Chris has been fighting would settle things down in his knee. Now, again, keep in mind that Pronger's been out of the lineup for several days and a couple games now because of a virus. And the news broke this morning that he was having knee surgery. The utter hilarity of seeing the Philadelphia media going, well, that's one hell of a virus, was really remarkable. The virus attacked his knee. His patella has been infected.
It's common, quite common. Happens all the time, just not widely reported. Just like in Spinal Tap, where people choke on their own vomit. Happens all the time, just not widely reported, Greg.
Now, are we going to see an entire segment of 24/7 dedicated to Chris Pronger?
The recovery.
The hospital gown?
The road back. Yeah. The road back of him wheeling through a hospital in his hospital gown.
Yeah, exactly. Bare ass.
A pixelated Chris Pronger butt is what we're looking for.
No, sir. It's uncensored.
Oh, that's right. We get full on the small of the back and the top of the crack.
Uh-huh.
It's Chris Pronger, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, exactly. We could see.
Can they win
Pronger
without him? Oh, we've talked about it before. Can the Flyers win without Pronger?
No, they can't win.
Like, when you look at what the MVP, like the actual definition of the Hart Trophy, should it not be Chris Pronger like every year?
Oh, Jesus. Now you're making the Peyton Manning argument. Like, Peyton Manning should be the MVP because he didn't play and the Colts are terrible.
I'm just saying, like, this team can't win without that guy on the blue line. They can't.
I don't doubt it, but I don't think that makes him the MVP. I think the MVP is about effort, not about not being there to give an effort.
Right.
Dateline Anaheim. The Randy Carlisle watch is on via Eric Stevens of Ducks Blog. There are no signs that Ducks GM Bob Murray is considering to end Carlisle's seven-year reign in Anaheim, despite his team's 6-13-4 record. Murray spent the weekend in Syracuse scouting the Ducks AHL team. As close as they are, it would seem extremely unlikely that Murray would ever cut loose Carlisle without doing it in a face-to-face meeting. The belief is that Murray might be on the fence as far as deciding whether or not to move one of his big stars, or remain patient and hope that they come around to pull the Ducks out of their free fall. If anyone can find me evidence that outside of one game recently, Bobby Ryan is actually playing this season, please send it my way.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm pretty sure that the owner of the Anaheim Ducks, Henry Samueli, has said to Bob Murray, you want to make a coaching change? That's fine. This guy's on the first year of a three-year contract extension. If you want to make a coaching change, that's fine, but we're not adding a dime of salary to this organization.
Dude,
right now.
That's why the Mueller contract is kind of nutty. Isn't it kind of nutty? Like this year and three more for a guy that hasn't coached but a game in the National Hockey League?
But when you look at the Carolina vibe, though, I mean, everything they do is about, I'm going to get like all waxy and poetic, it's all about family with the Carolina Hurricane. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like with Carmanos, everything is about mi familia. Right? And I think that was particularly attractive to Kirk, his wife, and their four daughters.
Well, that's fine, but what if he John McClane's it up? I don't think he will. I think Mueller's a better coach. I think he's much more well qualified for this gig than McClane ever was for a head coaching job. But what if things go badly?
I know.
Dateline Montreal from the Globe and Mail. Andrei Markov, who hasn't played in a little over 12 months, was taking a regular shift with fellow Russian Alexei Emelin. I'm sure I butchered that. At practice Monday, and also found himself lining up in the top power play unit with PK Subban. Coach Jacques Martin wouldn't confirm Markov will be coming back on Wednesday, but past practice indicates that the team prefers to ease the 32-year-old into action on the road. So draw your own conclusions, sir.
Yeah, they need him back. Hey, here's obvious statement number 2,343 out of me today. They thought that PK Subban could be that anchor on the power play, but no one moves the puck out of the zone. No one passes the puck. No one skates with the puck, and no one anchors the power play. Like Andrei Markov. The only question we have about him is when he gets back in the lineup, when's the next injury? Because aren't we to the point where now, you know, you're just waiting for that next bump that's going to, you know, injure another part of his body or one of the two knees that he's had worked on already?
It's just a matter of time.
Don't
right?
you think? I mean, I don't get that soap and warm water feeling about Andrei Markov. I have that, don't go, don't hit him, oh, what? Like, that's... I get that cringe every time I see, I'm going to see Andrei Markov get hit. And it's unfortunate, too.
And finally, as Merrick mentioned before, Dateline NHL, Sidney Crosby named the NHL's first star of the week, followed by Sidney Crosby and then also Sidney Crosby. Oh, I'm sorry, Corey Schneider and Brian Elliott.
Is that like when Maurice Richard got all three stars in that one game?
Brian Elliott, man. I mean, you hesitate to laud him too much because you have this creeping feeling that it's not going to last. But boy, what a great story.
There have been some great, I mentioned this earlier on, there have been some really nice comeback stories this year. Sheldon Surrey is a nice one, although without Goligoski in the lineup, he's been a different player. Ryan Smith, boy, is there anyone that is born to play with the Edmonton Oilers? Nikolai Habibulin, spend a few days behind bars and you look better between the pipes. He's been excellent, but there hasn't been, in my mind, a better comeback story this year than Brian Elliott. Because he was supposed to be 6 feet under, throw the dirt, throw the flowers. He is done. Lay the topsoil, put the sod on top, and start planting. Because this guy is finished playing hockey at the NHL level. Ottawa Senators fans thought that. Colorado Avalanche fans thought that. There was only one person in the entire NHL that didn't believe it, and that's John Davidson. Who said, and as a goaltender himself said, no, I still think there's something there. I still think there's something there with Brian Elliott. Let's take it. Let's roll the dice on this guy. He'll be a nice, safe backup for Yaroslav Halak should he falter. Halak did, and who was there to make sure that the St. Louis Blues didn't fall into obscurity? Brian Elliott, early candidate for me for the comeback player of the year. You agree?
The Masterton Trophy will go to Sidney Crosby, sir. There's simply no other candidate worth mentioning.
Really?
Yep. Locked up.
Yeah.
Clear out another space in the trophy case right next to the gold medal. It is the Masterton winner, Sidney Crosby. Couple more question of the day answers. Chris Cooper, Hunter will be so frustrated with the lack of effort that Semin will be gone in a month.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I don't think it would surprise me at all. He's Brad's, out there. Go ahead.
Brad Spencer to that end. I can't wait till Hunter starts to get some of his guys on his team. Kadri
for seven. Yeah, just reading that tweet, Brad. That's good. Just going to start bringing all the London Knights together. Well, let's see. Who did he have? He had John Carlson on the London Knights a couple of seasons ago. Who else did he have there with the Washington Capital of the London Knights? Is there anyone else that Hunter had? Just enough off the top of my head. I think John Carlson might be the only one. Am I missing anything?
I want to say that there's another guy, but I forget who it was because they mentioned him during the press conference.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Carlson for sure, though. But again, it's not like the team is populated with his guys.
He's going to bring back Robbie Shrempe to the NHL.
Well, you know, if it ever goes to a shootout, sir, the man's got skills.
No, you should have seen him, man. You know what? You should have seen Rob. There was one St. Mike's game. Oh, man. I remember I was at St. Mike's Arena once watching a St. Michael's Majors London Knights game. And this is during 2005 when they went on that. Like, they only lost, Greg, they lost like 8 games all season. This team was sick. And Robbie Shrempe, because as I mentioned, Dale Hunter would just play the top guys and play the top guys. There was a situation where the St. Mike's Majors were on a penalty kill for like 13 minutes. Like the half the period was all power play for the London Knights. And I remember because I was sitting there talking to Mark Osborne and we counted. Robbie Shrempe was on the ice for 11 minutes in a row of power play time.
Wow.
It was insanity. 11 minutes.
That's like Paul Coffey time right there. Right?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. It brings back.
Do you think
we're
going to see other coaches go? By the way,
I do.
How many others? Like, who else do you think's gone?
I'm surprised that Scott Arneil is still there. Although Columbus is playing better, and boy, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach. Curtis Sanford comes in, and all of a sudden, Scott Arneil's kind of groovy right now. You know, he seems like he's all right.
Who lasts longer, Randy Carlyle or Terry Murray?
Ooh.
I think I look at those two situations and I say to myself that Terry Murray is the guy that you get rid of to elevate the team to another level. I don't see the Ducks getting rid of Randy Carlyle. I think they make
because
a
of the salary
they fire the coach
because of the salary. Well, yeah. You know, it's a great point because this is hanging on. See, right now this is hanging on the GM in LA more than it's hanging on the general manager in Anaheim. Like right now, this is show me time for Dean Lombardi because he's kind of built to this year, don't you think? And Mike Richards was kind of that final piece. They thought it might have been Ilya Kovalchuk when that didn't work out, but now this seems like the Mike Richards piece is the final one, and they have Drew Doughty locked up. This seems like this is the year for the Los Angeles Kings to take that next step. So this is all on Dean Lombardi, and this is the team that you've put together. So if it's going to take a coaching change for Dean Lombardi to salvage the season and maybe even salvage his job, I think Terry Murray, you know what? I think I'm just talking myself into it now. I think Terry Murray goes before Randy Carlyle.
I think you're right. Now, let me throw a curveball in there. Does Joe Sacco go before Terry Murray?
I do think that Joe Sacco goes, and I believe that there was some interest in Kirk Muller. They've been sort of snooping around the availability of Kirk Muller. So
kicking
it wouldn't
the tires.
I was trying to kicking stay away from that. I've had enough cliches on the program today. I think that Joe Sacco is still very much on the seat that is not cold.
That would be the
what would be interesting too is if they brought in Patrick Waugh, the Quebec Ramparts, right? Because listen, it's happened with the Hunters, with London and Washington right now, and they've played footsies before with Patrick Waugh before Joe Sacco got the job, right? Because I think Patrick wanted the dual portfolio of general manager and coach. But the thing about Patrick Waugh that we all have to consider, he's very, very specific about the situations that he walks into, and he won't walk into a bad situation. Dennis Weidman, by the way. Thank you, KPB, on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's Dennis Weidman,
right,
who played with the London Knights. Patrick Waugh is very sensitive about the situations that he walks into, and he will only walk into a scenario where he will be successful. Like, if there was more of an uptick with the Colorado Avalanche right now and they were a bona fide playoff team, and to your point about Los Angeles, it took a coach firing to take them to the next step, I think that is the point of entry for someone like Patrick Waugh. So maybe not now.
Alan May joins us in about 10 as we lead up to that interview. Let's talk about the Penguins and the Montreal Canadiens, sir. The patch you already hit on Letang, I think, deserved a suspension. By the time you listen to the show, you'll probably know what happened to him.
It's a phone interview, by the way. It's a phone meeting, so that means 4 games or less.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it should settle in maybe around 2 games. It was a reckless hit. It was the kind of hit that the Department of Player Safety and Brendan Shanahan are trying to get out of the game.
It's Richards on Booth, right?
Yeah, to a lesser extent.
cut to the middle with the head down.
Because I think honestly, if you take a look at it, it looks like you could argue shoulder and head around the same time.
Yeah,
you could. So I don't think it's as egregious as Richards on Booth.
No, but at the same time too, David Booth was playing at the top of his skates and Chris Letang wasn't. Like, Chris Letang's not a player that skates on the top of his skates, unlike a forward who is lean. This is a defense. Like, let's consider the body positioning. It's a defenseman who's more of a lean back guy.
This was this is more like Savard Cook. Outside of there was no chicken winging like fucking Cook had. But I think that in this case it was after the shot. Even if Letang thought that he could get hit, he certainly didn't think that he was going to get a hit to the head like that.
I see. I still don't like, and I know I'm a dinosaur about this, and I know that, oh, Jeff, you have to evolve and it's a different game. I still don't like players coming in over the blue line and doing that little curl underneath it.
Oh, come on. You got to protect the players, man.
How about protecting yourself? Like that little college curl, come over the blue line and curl in towards the middle. Man, with the trailing back checker being where he is right now, that's death. That is death. Man, it has to be a north-south game now more than ever because curling to the middle is dangerous.
We can't sit here and talk about player safety and brain injuries and all this other stuff and then give the benefit of the doubt to the hitter.
But I think that player safety involves a player who's getting hit as well. And I know
in certain aspects, for sure, like putting yourself in a prone position, that kind of thing.
So
sure,
you're cool.
I don't think Letang did that though.
You're cool with cutting to the middle with your head down.
Under the blue line.
No, but even that move to put him in that position. Like there are just some positions that are dangerous to get a shot off. Right? And isn't that you put your head down and take a shot on that rush, Greg?
The real issue is why is it dangerous? It's dangerous because you've got guys that are trying to take a cheap shot at the guy, like Pacioretty did.
Yeah, I would argue that for the greater overall safety, if you go back to the bench, your coach says, don't do that again.
I think you remove the danger is what you do. You don't tell the player not to go to that spot. You remove the danger by making that
don't go to
illegal.
That spot with your head down. It's just like the Danny Paya hit on Ray Sawada. I didn't have any problem with the Danny Paya hit. When you go to the middle, like in between the hash marks with your head down on a hard cut, man, I'm sorry. I think you deserve to get hit.
Two other things on this thing. First off, enough with the hypocrisy calls against Pacioretty.
I agree with that.
If he had ridden Chris Letang's head into the turnbuckle like George the Animal Steel, yes.
And yelled,
you can say that it was hypocrisy. You can say it was hypocrisy. But not for this hit. He has hit guys high before. He will hit guys high again. Just because he went through what he went through with Chara doesn't mean his card is pulled. He's no longer allowed to hit anybody.
I agree. Having said that, Greg, I am – every time I hear a player speak out about a bad hit and an egregious against his team, don't you always say the same thing? One day it's going to be you.
Yeah.
Because this is a game. This is a game right now that you know it's best not to paint anyone else with the hypocrisy brush because it's going to come right back to you. Here we are, four games into Sidney Crosby's comeback, and already he hit someone in the head. Here we are with Max Pacioretty, and yes, it is different than the Zdeno Chara hit, but he's involved in a situation where someone's calling him on the carpet and saying, "Why are you hitting guys up around high? You made all this stink about headshots last year." I was talking to tweeting last night with Ellen from A Theory of Ice, great blog, and love it. Wonderful, really smart hockey person.
We have to get her on.
Oh, she's remarkable. Yeah, really, really smart person. And I point that I was trying to make is I don't think that hockey is a sport that can be played clean. Like I just don't. When there's contact involved, no one's hands will end up being clean. So whenever you point your judging finger at another player on another team, be careful because that's going to be you one day.
It's an inherently violent sport.
Totally.
The other thing about the Pacioretty hit that warrants some scrutiny is the fact that there was an injury on the play. He had a broken nose. He did not have a concussion. They claim there was a test of some sort. I don't think it was necessarily the kind of baseline testing that they want.
Biles, by the way, said that
he came back. Came back in overtime, and he scored the game-winning goal, which transitions us to the other controversy from that game, in which Carey Price had the puck frozen, James Neal dug it out, and Chris Letang scored. And Carey Price had every right to be irate after that game because he got screwed by the officials.
It was a split second, Greg.
Oh, he had that thing covered up.
Something he had it covered up. Very interesting happened yesterday and Saturday. I'll talk about Dan O'Rourke in a second. But If you really ask Carey Price, how many times have you heard growing up until when you played in the NHL and you still hear it then, play till the whistle. Play till the whistle, play till the whistle. And there were a lot of Montreal Canadiens players that around that when they saw Carey Price with his hand on the puck. And it's not an automatic whistle when the hands, like guys poke and guys will try to draw pucks out. At this, I'm not saying that it's right, but I'm saying that it's a reality in the NHL. How many times have you heard growing up, everyone who's listening, who's ever played hockey, play till the whistle? That was a play till the whistle moment. And there was no whistle, and it was Dan O'Rourke. Now, this is Dan O'Rourke, okay, who heard it afterwards from Carey Price. Blasted. Montreal Canadiens fan, blasting him. You had to call the whistle there. The goalie had the puck. What happened in the Carolina-Ottawa game last night when Craig Anderson had the puck? Very briefly, it squirted behind him on a Tuomo Ruutu shot, which would have tied up the game, went right through his legs. Even before the puck had a chance to squirt behind him, which is a split second, who's the referee right there who's just in from Montreal, where he officiated the game before, to blow the whistle quickly? Dan O'Rourke. And you could make the argument that he blew both calls, that his whistle was too slow on Saturday and too fast on Sunday. And I do wonder if Dan O'Rourke had a little bit of, oh, not this again syndrome when he saw what happened on Saturday. So as soon as Craig Anderson had that puck, even before the split second where the puck squirted out, Dan O'Rourke got the whistle to the lips and blew it dead. Ruutu blew a gasket, and I think he had a legitimate point too.
The other interesting thing with the Penguins, of course, in the past couple of days, I know this is a favorite thing for Merrick, the back and forth between Brian Murray and the Pittsburgh Penguins, based on Sidney Crosby elbowing Foligno in the jaw.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Well, the rules are very clear now that if you fall into a goaltender, you touch a goaltender, an elbow to the head, butt end of the head, is fair. It's okay. Dan Bylsma said that that's okay for them. Sidney said Nick Foligno was that kind of player. I'm not sure that. I wish he was that kind of player, but. I thought that the referees in that game, watching it, hearing the comments, it was 2-2. He could cross-check four times. He fell over the goaltender. There's no question he fell over the goaltender. Did he get pushed? I don't know.
No, he didn't. Come on, Brian.
But he could cross-check when he was on the ice. He got, I thought, it looked like a butt end, but probably a full-time elbow. He punched back. Kunitz came in with a cross-check, and the penalties were even at the end of the incident. So Shanahan said that's a good play. It's a hockey play. Dan Bylsma said it's good for them. Pittsburgh were the biggest ones on the head injuries, I thought, early on. And so it's I'm remiss. I made a mistake. We didn't have Neil and Karkner playing the game, and we didn't have enough toughness. So when we play Pittsburgh, I guess that well something you can bring up to me again.
I love Brian Murray.
By the way, I could have gone my entire life without hearing Brian Murray attempt to say Sidney said.
Something about that alliteration. But I'll tell you what, that is not, Greg, that is not old school. That is from the school they burned down to build the old school. Now, you compare that reaction to the elbow to the head that Nick Foligno got. Compare that reaction from Brian Murray to what you heard out of the Buffalo Sabres after Milan Lucic ran over Ryan Miller, where it was pout and complain and whine and, oh, I can't believe this. This is Brian Murray saying, well, I guess in their mind, that's okay. And you know what? Maybe it was my fault. I didn't dress Neil. I didn't dress Karkner. My bad, wink, wink. But we play these guys again. Oh, by the way, plug for Sportsnet here. On December the 16th on Sportsnet, we will have the Ottawa Senators and the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't think they'll have a problem selling tickets to Scotiabank Place for that one. If you can't get a ticket, you can watch it on Sportsnet. But
you know,
we mentioned
the Pierre Turgeon thing kind of being an albatross for Dale Hunter in his career. There's no getting out from Mario's comments after that Islanders brawl, is there, from Pittsburgh?
No.
Yeah.
And that's kind of to my point earlier about talking about players who wag their fingers at other guys for what they consider to be bad hits. Eventually, it's going to be you. You know, hypocrisy is the greatest luxury. I'll say it again. But one day, that will be you. You will be not the hitee, but the hitter. And you'll be saying to yourself, yeah, but I didn't mean to do it. And I'll also say, well, that doesn't matter because you said that you're going to hold yourself to a higher standard. You're not going to be
again,
that guy. And Mario with the Islanders
like situation
said, I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Much like in the situation with Pacioretty, though, again, you have people saying it's hypocrisy that Sidney Crosby hit some guy in the head. Okay, he elbowed him in the chin. Okay, mm-hmm. He didn't drive his head into the boards like Victor Hedman. He didn't even hit him behind the play like Dave Steckel. It's not hypocrisy. Come on.
All it is, and again, and you know, God bless Ellen, who's listening to the podcast and who brings up a great point too. This is why, oh man, what happened to my computer? Ellen just sends me a note. Show me a good coach, and I'll show you a good goalie. Quote Jeff Merrick. But Mueller's coaching is what they got the Canadians past Washington. Excellent point. But Mueller was the guy that shut down Ovechkin specifically. That's why I love Ellen. She's smart. Damn it, I hate when smarter people that are smarter than me listen to the show, which is pretty much everybody.
I do recall Carey Price playing a couple games here and there during that series.
Yes, that is
true. It wasn't as if Halak,
didn't run the table on the Washington Capitals. What was the point that I was trying to get to? Can't remember now. I got so distracted by trying to be proven wrong by Ellen here. Anyway, I can't wait to see what happens the next time these two teams meet. But to the point about hypocrisy, it's not a game that can be played without it. Right? Like at this level, at this speed, with this type of physicality, you will be the hitter and you will be the hitty. And I've never wanted to tell a player to shut up or don't speak your mind or, you know, don't, you know, tell us how you feel legitimately. But just don't be surprised when it comes back to bite you on the butt, because it always will. It always will.
John Cazera writes in, who are the actual Semin suitors? I think that's the real issue, my friend, is the fact that I'm not convinced that that man will be traded and report to a lot of places in this National Hockey League. I have a feeling that if Alex Semin got traded to a place he didn't want to be, then he would be in Russia. Yeah. And I sincerely believe that.
Guess who's aboard now, Greg?
The great Alan May.
It's true. He joins us now. Alan, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks.
Pleasure to have you on board. You weren't surprised at today's events, were you?
Not at all. Absolutely not. And I after the game Saturday, I knew without a doubt it had to happen. The last time I had that feeling, Glenn Hanlon got fired, and I was on the net every 5 minutes looking for the transactions before I had this job. And I had that exact same awful feeling Saturday night after the Buffalo game.
Alan, Dale Hunter comes in. You know Dale Hunter. What does he bring to the table that Bruce Boudreau did not?
Well, he's fearless. And he's a competitor. He competes at everything. We used to play in the same card game together on the flights and on the bus in the hotel. And it was small stakes, but all he cared about was winning. He'll do anything to win. He will, you know, he would beat up his own brother to get a win. I think he's actually done that. But this guy competes at everything. And he, you know, when you talk about accountability, he has it, and he brings it every day. He was the first guy. I always used to try to pretend that I was the hardest worker on the team. But every day I showed up at the gym, up at the dressing room, Dale would be in on the bike. He'd be the first guy on the bike. He'd pedal an hour before practice. He'd go on the ice early. He'd stay late. He just works and works and works. And, you know, when he stood up in the room, he wasn't shy about what he had to say, and he told it to everyone. It didn't matter if you were the best player on the team. It didn't matter if you were the coach. He's the kind of guy, when he talks, people listen. And he's got a winning pedigree as a coach, and I don't think that's going to change at all. His teams reflect his personality. They outwork everybody.
Do you not have a concern, though, if you're the Washington Capitals, that Dale Hunter is walking into the National Hockey League after having coached in the OHL for the past number of years, and coaching, you know, 16 to 20-year-olds is a lot different than coaching men with guaranteed contracts in their hip pocket. Is that not a concern through all this, Alan?
You know, the 19 years of being a player, the winning in junior hockey, he's got players inside that dressing room that have already played for him. You know, with most people, I would be concerned that they don't know how to communicate properly. But don't forget, he's back among his peers. He's an NHL player through and through, always has been, always will be. It was just a matter of time until someone coaxed him out of London. You know, he had the greatest setup in the world.
Yeah.
And for him to not be able to get his point across, I think would be ridiculous. And I think Alexander Ovechkin respects him. He knows that this was the former leader of this franchise, and he knows how to play the game every way. You know, 1,000 points, 3,000-plus penalty minutes, only guy in league history to do that. The only thing missing off of Dale's resume is the Stanley Cup, and believe me, he wants to win that. And the players will listen to him. He will know how to communicate, and the players will buy into everything that he has to say.
You mentioned Ovechkin respecting Dale Hunter. Question being, how much blood do you think he has on his hands with Boudreau's firing?
Well, I'll tell you what. There are, you know, a lot of people are talking about a disconnect. The disconnect was the lack of ice time. You know, Mike Green goes out, the team falls apart. Their record without Mike was 4-9-1, 8-0 with him in the lineup. And you lose an all-star defenseman, a guy that was the way he was playing at the start of the year, definitely would have been a Norris Trophy candidate. And you lose him, and then Ovechkin's not getting any more ice time. And I really felt that if you want to play in the other team's end, because they were horrible in their own end throughout this spell here that they've had, and I would put Ovechkin on the ice, and he wasn't getting out there. I don't believe in 2 minutes on the power play. I never thought that was a good fit, but I thought, you know, a hard minute on the power play, but getting him more shifts, cutting the ice time down. You know, the team has a lot of good players on all the different lines, but when you've been one of the best goal scorers in the game and you've been the best left winger the last few, you know, the past 5 years in the game, 6 years, and all of a sudden you're not on the ice being able to create opportunities, I think that really hurt the team. So that was the blood there, and I really think that Bruce brought that on himself by not getting Ovechkin out there. Ovechkin's not the kind of guy that goes and cries to management about little things. He is a leader. There are a lot of people are anti-Russian around the league. And you know, really harbor a lot of ill will to a guy that's really a hardworking person. But he wants to be on the ice, and the number one way to keep that guy happy is to put him on the ice.
What does this team need then, in your estimate? Dale Hunter comes in, and his first order of business, outside of bumping up the minutes for Alexander Ovechkin, Alan, what does this team need to do? What does Dale Hunter need to teach this team or get this team to start doing?
Okay, well, Jeff, it's the best question ever, because they need to have an identity. They lost their identity. And I really thought that when they lost against Montreal a few years ago, there were just a couple little things in their scheme they had to change. And it was just tactical, just small tactics. They didn't have to do wholesale changes in the way they played their game. And, you know, Bruce quit being who he was as a coach and you know, relying on the offense. And this team didn't know what it was. But I, you know, they one night they're sitting back in Buffalo the other night. They sat back against a wounded hockey team that had, I think, 9 regulars out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Their 3 best penalty-killing defensemen. They're Patrick Kaleta, who's a penalty killer, second most used on the team. So they have 4 key components of their penalty kill, and they sat back in a game when they should have been an all-out blitz. They should have been attacking from every angle. And that's not their identity. Their identity needs to be, and what Dale will bring, they're going to be harder on the forecheck. They're going to attack the net hard, but they're going to swarm teams in different groups. And the one thing you've never been able to accuse the Washington Capitals of is hard work in the neutral zone on the back check, and that's going to change. They will back pressure like the Pittsburgh Penguins do. That's the number one thing that I thought Byles brought back there, was to compete without the puck. And then in their own zone, it's going to be tighter, hardworking, more commitment physically. And so his scheme is going to be about swarming the puck. But they will have an identity, and he's going to believe in what his team does, and he's not going to give too much respect to the other teams as far as altering their entire game plan to fit every team. He's going to bring a team that imposes his will, and he's more of a knock your door down type of guy than a guy that sits back and let you knock his down.
So do you think it's more of the best offense is the best defense kind of thing? Because, I mean, obviously this team's had its problems scoring goals, but the real issue has been keeping them out. I mean, you think Dale Hunter is the right guy for that?
Without a doubt. Look what the teams in London do, and it's always easy to put these, you know, he's got the most talent in the league every year. He's got players that are going to NCAA one week, the NCAA one week, and they ended up in London the next. And he's got a lot of blue chippers there, but they've got blue chips here. The problem is they weren't playing offense anymore, and they were back in their own end. And I attributed that to Mike Green. He gets you out of your own end in 5-8 seconds. He either passes it out clean, or he skates it out, joins the attack. And, you know, they don't track zone time anymore, but they were spending way too much time in their own zone. And a lot of the little details of the game, the fundamentals, weren't being taught, or you could tell the players weren't doing the right things. And that will change. Dale's an incredible teacher. The guys will be better in their own end. He will take them aside one by one and show them how to play the game properly in his own end. And you're going to see them. They'll lock it down a lot better in their own end, but believe me, he still wants to score goals. He doesn't believe in just sitting back and playing a trap. He's going to go after the puck, but the players are going to know what to do when they don't have it.
Tomorrow, against the St. Louis Blues, it's Hitchcock coaching versus Dale Hunter, just as we all predicted. and then it's the Pittsburgh Penguins on Thursday, and this, of course, is the first game after the Jay Beagle, Aaron Asham incident. And knowing Dale Hunter, Alan, as you've laid out the career and the MO and how he's always been and the fire in the eyes, and how he's coached in London as well, where it's been a highly skilled team but also a very tough team with the London Knights, what do you expect to happen on Thursday? Will there be any, what's the right word, payback for the nappy-nappy incident between Beagle and Asham?
You know what? I'm hoping that John Erskine plays the game, but I think the players, without having to be told, I think someone will go out there and make a statement on behalf of the Capitals. And I think I would love to see an old-fashioned 5-on-5 out there and have
Hell
the
yeah.
going out of the center, right? Yeah, I'd love to see some of that on Thursday.
But old-time hockey.
I know that Hunt wishes he could get out there and bring his old white Titan and whack them over the head, but he's that competitive. And you know what? The one thing about the Capitals, no matter how bad or how well they're playing, you never have to get them up for a game against Pittsburgh. That will be just an all-out battle that game.
All right, Alan May. Thank you so much for your time, sir. Alan May of Comcast Sportsnet here in D.C., covering the Capitals and a catalyst in the firing of Bruce Boudreau, by the way. His torch job on the air.
On Saturday?
Led to the firing, of course, as we all know.
Alan, thanks so much for joining us, bud.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Take care.
Alan May. He was really good.
Alan's great. Alan knows his team back of the hand, front of the hand, and he was one of the first to just come out and say they're dead. They're done. They can't go on with this guy behind the bench. And I think he was a little bit ahead of the curve. There was a big story in the Post this morning from Tarik El-Bashir talking about Boudreau having to go or some big changes needed to be made. And May was ahead of the curve. So, all right, Merrick.
Straight legs, by the way. That's the one thing you can always look at. Like when you're looking at a hockey team, I think we've made this point already with the Carolina Hurricanes. And we saw a lot of this with Washington. I saw it up close and personal with the Maple Leafs game, a 7-1 shellacking. Back-to-back Saturday nights where Washington touches their toes. When you start to see players with straight legs, you're not bending your knees, you're not trying. We saw that with Carolina. We've seen a lot of that with the Washington Capitals. So that's one of the early indications that your team has lost it for their coach.
Sure thing. All right. Well, it was a marathon today. A couple technical difficulties here and there. That's
Are we
okay.
done?
Yeah, I got a boogie, man. I got
Do
a
you?
Yeah.
You're talking about,
I know you can go on for
this is my,
hours.
You know, this is my day off. Like I'm not doing anything on Sportsnet tonight, so I'm just ready to go, bro. Talk about Cal Clutterbuck spraying Gatorade to Jerome McGinley last night.
It was brilliant.
On any other podcast. That's an hour for us, man. Right there.
I love it. Now, that's because Jerome chirped the bench.
I had no problem with what Clutterbuck did. I just hope
it
is. Because it's just a hyper NHL. Oh, $2,500 fine. You can't
but again, you have to understand that he's just doing what everyone in Minnesota is told to do. If you see a flame, you have to douse it because forest fires are a real concern.
Smokey, all right, Jeff the Bear. How many hits did he get credit for in that play, by the way? Three,
now
four?
You're just dogging again the official score.
Thank you.
I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. I want to thank everybody for joining us again for this unexpected marathon of an edition thanks to the firings in Carolina and Washington. And join us for the rest of the week as well.
Sorry for Paul Maurice and Bruce Boudreau, two of the good guys of the game. They understand the rap. Who do you think gets a job first?
Bruce will.
I think so too.
I think Maurice will get kicked upstairs.
It wouldn't surprise me if there's like an AGM portfolio for Paul Maurice. I agree with you 100%.
I think Boudreau will... I don't think he gets hired this season. I think, like McPhee said, the tank's on empty.
Yeah.
You gotta give him a little time to fill it up again. Hit the Shell station, fill it up again. But I think he'll wind up being back in the game by the middle of next year.
You know, I'm gonna start bugging my bosses as soon as this program is over to hire Gabby for the rest of the year as an analyst for Sportsnet.
Yeah, someone mentioned, hey, is he going to wind up working for Puck Daddy? And I said, hey, listen, man, we are hiring for a restaurant critic. So anytime that cat wants to come in here and put down the old food for us and tell us how it's working,
Can I tell Gabby stories tomorrow? I got a great one about his pants and his cut-up face. I have two really good Bruce Boudreau stories.
For Tuesday's edition, episode 11, when Jeff Merrick reveals the mysteries of Bruce Boudreau's pants.
You'll love it. You'll love this story. Trust me. You'll love it.
All right, I'm Greg Wyshynski.
Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet. Fun show.
Thanks, everybody.